When Ryan was in grade 5, he had a crush on a girl named Tanya. But like many grade 5 crushes, it wasn't perfect.
January 14th, I got 98%, or maybe 100%, on my science test. I think I'm too smart for Tanya.
Boo-hoo! That's Ryan reading from his grade 5 diary, and this is Grown-Ups Read Things They Wrote as Kids. I'm Dan Meisner, and each week on our show, we invite brave Canadians to share their childhood and teenage writing, their poetry, their short stories, and their math geek confessions. This week, recorded live at the Garrison in Toronto, we have boyfriend checklists, self-righteous rants about the education system, and one fine Italian leather trench coat. This stuff is cute and funny, and sometimes it is totally bizarre. So think about the amazing relics from your childhood that you could unearth from your parents' basement. And stick around. Back to Ryan and the ups and downs of his obsession with Tanya.
January 21st. Today I went shopping. I feel excellent in my new pants and shirt. I am going to give Tanya a shell necklace. Maybe. Next day. Had some time to think about it. January 22nd. I have thought about it and I'm going to give Tanya the necklace. I am only doing this because Scott says he will give her a $40 necklace. Mine is a $1.07 necklace. Too bad. February 1st. Kevin warned me not to make him break up with Tanya. I also found out she hates her sister, too. For my birthday, I'm going to buy some army stuff. Kevin is weak. February 14th is coming up soon. Oh boy, will Tanya be surprised. February 14th, and this is true, it's my birthday. Today was the best birthday of my life, fun-wise. Right in the morning, I... one word, by the way, fun-wise, one word for the language people. Right in the morning, I gave Tanya the necklace and card, and then she said thank you, like when I hold the door for her. I always used to hold the door. Then at recess, by then the rumor was out. At lunch, Kevin came up to me, quote, "Why did you give Tanya a necklace?" That was after Lori asked how much the necklace was, and I said around $50, and she said, "Oh my God." February 15th. Today was not so good. Tanya did not say a thing to me except thank you when I held the door. Oh well. February 21st. I am getting me and Tanya up to our old friendship. I found out that you have to get it back slowly. February 23rd. After school, I started to push James's brother around after he turned into a sex maniac and went after Tanya. March 6th. Today I am signing that I will start to hate Tanya unless she starts to hate Oliver. And then I actually wrote, Ryan B. signed March 6th, 9:25 p.m., 1984. So that's legal. May 16th. Today I had a fight with Kevin after he broke Tanya's necklace, the one I gave her. From the encyclopedias, it went to the middle of the couches and then onto a couch bracket with girls on it who quickly left and then back to the middle of the couches. We both punched each other to death. June 1st, today was a good day. One day, I'm going to make Tanya look like a fool. That's it. Thank you very much.
Ryan admits that this journal doesn't exactly show him in the most positive light, But that's part of what makes it so great. It can be humbling to look back at our younger selves and realize just how wrong we were about the world, especially if, at the time, we thought we had the world pretty much figured out. I don't know how you would measure this, but I would love it if social scientists decided to investigate which age we reach peak self-righteousness. For our next reader, Julia, I'm willing to bet it was about grade 10 when she wrote this vitriolic rant in response to getting a bad grade on an English assignment.
I was a passionate overachiever who apparently was really bad at taking any type of criticism and with really strong ideas about how the public school system should work. So I'll start. October 21st, 2001. Dear Diary. Okay. So it's 12:42 in the morning, and I'm a total insomniac. I started thinking about Miss McDonald, my English teacher, and I got so worked up, I figured the best solution was to write the one creative outlet that I have, and one that she's trying to kill. So I gave her this essay regarding reliable narrators and the effect that reliability has the rest on the story, etc. It wasn't my best work, but it wasn't bad at all. For every point, I had a statement to back it up. I had a thesis, controlling idea for every paragraph, etc. The only real problem that I had was that there's a chance that I didn't completely understand the question. And there were a few grammatical errors. She marked me so ridiculously low, and for no real reason. At least none that she explained. I figure what happened was that she saw that I didn't completely understand the question. And instead of saying, okay, well, she was a bit confused, but let's see where she takes it. She just decided that nothing was up to par after that. I can't remember ever being so outraged. I feel as if the sight of her makes me want to tear apart my gut. I guess I do have a bit of a temper, but only because I have absolutely no respect for her as a creative artist, as a teacher, as a person, or as a writer. There is nothing positive that I've seen to acquire from her personality. My mom's friend Erin, who's a teacher, came over on Saturday night, and I asked her if she could help me look it over for me. We spent an hour looking over the corrections, trying to figure out what her ridiculous codes meant and how I could honestly improve. Frankly, I could not have gotten anything from those corrections on my own, and even Erin had some trouble. She just seems like such a malicious person. She reeks of insecurities, and you can tell it's just that which motivates her to try and prove herself smarter than all of her pupils by being condescending and unsupportive. She in no way tried to help the student obtain their maximum potential. She is what's wrong with society. Everything is going corporate. The government... The government is taking the arts out of education. And high tech is what rules downtown. They're draining the creativity out of our society, and that's exactly what Ms. McDonald is doing to the English department. She's refusing to accept anything new. Forget coming up with different perspectives or interpretations, because only what she says is right. I want to tell her what an awful teacher she is. I want her to let her know how much she's ruined not only drama, but now English for me. Writing is my only creative outlet. And she's taken away my confidence in that. Even if it were only temporary, she was able to suck it out of me. With only a few short strokes of her pen, she crushed my soul. My spirit. I will not only resent her for that for the rest of my life, but it's due to that I will never respect her either. Can she sleep with herself knowing what a negative impact she has on people? Or is she so dense that she doesn't even notice? Or does she not want to notice? I know this is mean, but I want to break her. I want her to admit that I'm right. I want her to show signs of a soul, of intellect, of raw emotion. I want her to break down and admit what an awful teacher she is. I know that I shouldn't say all of this, but if I can't be honest here, where can I? Not only does she completely frustrate me, but she made me doubt myself, and I won't allow anyone to do that. I'll let you know how it turns out, Julia.
Sometimes our childhood writing can reveal just how little we knew about ourselves at the time, even when that writing sends out extremely clear signals. Here's Jason reading a journal entry from when he was 14, a time in his life that he now calls his dramatic gay teenhood.
And I should preface this. When I was 14, all my friends liked soccer, and I liked Joan Collins from Dynasty. Just give a little background, okay? Thanks. When she stepped in the door, everyone gasped. She glided foot in front of foot towards the front of the room. Everyone knew she was Faye St. James, the famous fashion designer. When she reached the front, she stopped. Everything stopped. Her wide green emerald eyes were perusing over all of us. Her soft olive skin brought out a glow in her. She had her raven-colored hair drawn back tightly into a bun. Her blood-red lipstick gave her a sophisticated smile. Her shoulders were built up high with shoulder pads to make her waist look even more slender. She smelled of rose perfume, which was, of course, her own creation. She was wearing a canary-colored, smock-like cotton jacket, which came down at the back like a harp. I can see it. I don't know. This smock hung over a black, knee-length skirt. She looked like $1 million. And so she should. She was Faye St. James. Thank you. I'd like to read one more journal entry. This was for a school again. Yeah. This is called Sense. That's S-C-E-N-T-S, okay? Raspberry gum. Definitely the smell of raspberry gum has got to be one of my favorites. I love the thought of popping one of those into my mouth. And while I'm chewing that gum, I just may be wearing my fine Italian leather trench coat. Because, I love the smell of leather too. And just maybe, while I am chewing my gum and wearing my fine Italian leather trench coat, the scent of dry tea bags may blow into my face. Maybe someone has stuck dry tea bags in the air conditioner of my brand new convertible Mercedes-Benz. You see, the smell of a new car is my favorite smell of all. So, if you see a strange-looking lad with a raspberry bubble in front of his lips, a fine Italian leather trench coat on his back, and dry tea bags taped to the steering wheel of his convertible Mercedes-Benz, don't be afraid. It is yours truly. Thank you very much.
From that journal entry, it sounds like Jason was pretty confident in his identity at the age of 14. But when I asked him about it after the show, He told me that wasn't the case.
No, I was not out at 14. I wasn't even out to myself at 14. And journal entries around that same period reflect all these girls that I liked at the time. And I wasn't even close to coming out. I didn't come out till I was 20. It was the 80s, and no one at my age in high school was coming out then. So it was a little bit later. But I know the kids come out much earlier now, right? You have all these things that you feel you're different from everybody else, and you're not like anybody else, and that nobody understands you. I think that's a lot of what the writings are anyway. Yeah. Nobody gets me. Nobody understands me. And then years later, well, 30 years later anyway, you realize that not only does everybody understand, but no matter how different you are, everyone kind of relates when you look back at that period, right? It's awkward and it's unusual and it's kind of a funny period, but everyone relates to that somehow, right? It feels really nice.
This is Grown-Ups Read Things They Wrote as Kids. I'm Dan Meisner. Each week on our show, shameless Canadians share their childhood and teenage writing in front of a room full of strangers. Today's show was recorded live at the Garrison in Toronto. You know, the concept of a reboot when it comes to a story or a character is everywhere these days. I mean, how many film versions of Spider-Man or Superman have we seen in the past couple of years? But our next reader, Claire, was way ahead of that curve. When she was 6 years old, she wrote a story about a shipwreck. And then a year later, she wrote a reboot of the same shipwreck story. Here she is with both versions.
The Shipwreck. I dedicate this book to my grandma. Oh, yes. One day, the ship Lily left port. She was going northwest. A storm came up. The crew was excited. The cook was too, so he forgot about his food. It tipped over. It was burning. The ship did not sink. 2 days later, the ship caught fire again. This time from electricity. It sank. The end. So a year later, I realized that that story was lacking some things. People. It didn't really have any people in it. It didn't have a protagonist. It didn't have a villain. And it was also missing some advanced vocabulary. So to understand this next story, you have to know the word crimp. Now, a crimp is a person who hangs out in port towns and gets people drunk, so drunk that they don't remember what they're doing, and then abducts them and puts them on board a ship and makes them be sailors. How I knew that when I was 7, your guess is as good as mine. The last voyage of the Lily May. Polly and Trina looked at the inn before them. They knew it was a nest of crimps. Anyway, they went in. When they saw how dark it was, they asked for a candle and locked the door. A creak on the stairs startled Trina. A knock on the door, Polly answered it. The door opened, and Polly saw ... a crimp. The crimp grabbed Trina and Polly and made them sign. Then he took them to a big wind jammer. They had to stay in the hull with bilge water. And that is about all of my nautical vocabulary right there. Soon Polly noticed the hull was filling with water. The boat sank. Polly towed Trina to a sandbar, and they went home. The end.
Crimps and bilge water. I love it when a reading is both entertaining and educational. I was once a teenage boy, and I can tell you firsthand, the idea that teenage girls had some list of criteria that I was somehow not measuring up to, that idea is horrifying. And it's also true. Here's Lily.
My perfect guy criteria. Likes Seinfeld. Has charisma. Happy a lot. Brackets, loves to laugh. Funny, brackets, witty. Not fake, hates fake people. Accepts my gross flaws. And then in brackets I've written poo. This is the one that I maybe still use, but I don't know what I mean by that. I don't have any sort of condition. I think it's just, I didn't know that boys were okay with that. But they are. It's 14 years later. They're fine with it. It's okay. Has a passion or hobby. Takes music seriously, in brackets, very into it. Smart, easy to talk to, brackets, listens and responds appropriately. Good looking, brackets, lips. Nice manly style, which is funky. And then in brackets I wrote, I like Queen Street. Thinks I'm funny and pretty and smart. And in brackets I just wrote, loves me. Gets along with everybody. Likes cats. Not lazy. Will do anything with me as long as he's with me. And this whole thing has it's written so that there's like a ranking system, so everything is out of 3. And so you put every guy through the test, and so it's not as much as a checklist as it is they come out with a score. And then all over everything is like different color pen with all different people's scores. And unfortunately, I'd like to report that my friend's boyfriend, Evan, came out with the highest score. So.
Lily wasn't the only teenager with a specific idea of what she wanted in a boyfriend. Our next reader, Sarah, had a similar list, but she decided to express her boyfriend criteria in poem form.
I grew up in suburban Calgary. I wanted my bedroom to be painted black. It was a light baby pink. I had all these feelings inside, like I wanted to be a poet, I wanted to be an artist. But I had no life experience, so I just let rhyming take over. And yeah, I encourage you to shout out the obvious rhyme if you can think of it. I bet you can. This is a poem about what I wanted my first boyfriend to be like. It's called He. He can stand out in the crowd. He really makes me proud. Gold star, everyone. But he's above me on a cloud. He told me what he vowed. Yeah, I was in advanced English. He told a lie when he was high. He watched the angels pass him by, looked at them with a sigh, for they moved and he stayed, tied to die and die and die. You figured out when rhyming just took over? He took my heart apart. I'm in pain. That's his game. What a shame. Tied to die and die and die. And there's a times two, so, and die and die and die and die. I found him dead. In my bed. Put a bullet in his head with a note that, yeah, it should be read, right? But I wrote said, come on. And what did the note say? Now it's time to die and 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 die. Thank you guys so much.
That's Grown-Ups Read Things They Wrote as Kids for this week. Our show was recorded live at the Garrison in Toronto and produced by Allison Broverman and me, Dan Meisner. Our music is by Lullatone. You can listen to this and every other episode of our show at the website, cbc.ca/grownups. That's also where you can subscribe to our totally free weekly podcast. And if all of this sounds like fun and you want to know when we're coming to your town for a live event, sign up for our mailing list. It's the best way to find out about upcoming shows, get tickets, and sign up to read. You can join the mailing list at our website, grownupsreadthingstheywroteaskids.com. That's grownupsreadthingstheywroteaskids.com. You know, here at the show, our ears are always open for a new catchphrase. You know, a slogan that really sums the show up. And I think this week we may have found one. Let's try it out. Grown-ups read things they wrote as kids.
Now it's time to die and die and die.
I'm Dan Meisner. Thanks for listening.